You are tuned in to a Fireside Chat with Zany Mystic. Join us now on another exciting metaphysical journey. Relax, tune in, drop out, and take a seat by the fire as we explore new realms and possibilities. This is Magenta Pixie. You can find me at magentapixie.weebly.com. But now, here is Zany Mystic and guest. Enjoy the show.
Greetings, everyone, and welcome to a Fireside Chat with Zany Mystic. I'm your host, Lance White. Tonight, my guest is Darren Littlejohn, who was highly recommended by another of my wonderful guests, Penny Pierce, who wrote the book Intuition. Darren is a recovering addict and a practitioner of Zen and Tibetan Buddhism, as well as a former mental health specialist. He earned a Bachelor of Arts in Psych in 1991 and worked in clinical dependency and acute psychiatric care facilities during college. He has been a Buddhist practitioner since the mid-1980s. A spiritual crisis led to a relapse in 1994 after 10 years of sobriety. Once regaining sobriety in 1997, Darren worked on recovery with a new zeal, incorporating many years of psychotherapy, 12-step work, Zen, and Tibetan Buddhist practices. While relapse with long-term sobriety is common, returning for sustained duration is extremely rare. Darren's program, which became the basis for the book, The 12-Step Buddhist, is an integrated approach that has developed over a span of more than 20 years. Tonight is a very special night for Darren, so let's welcome him to the show now and find out why. Hi, Darren. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing fantastic, Lance. Thanks for having me on the show.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I've wanted to do a show like this for a long time. But before we begin, didn't you mention something about tonight being a special time for you?
Yeah, today's my 5,000th day clean and sober.
Wow. Congratulations and kudos to you. That's a wonderful accomplishment. And while I'm saying this, I'd like to honor all of those who are listening tonight or who will be listening in the future who are on the path of spiritual sobriety and freedom from addictions, myself included, whether it's 24 hours or 30 or 40 years. Well, to start out, maybe we could follow a bit of the format from the rooms, and you could tell us a little bit about what it was like, what happened, and what it is, and how it is now.
Well, what it was like for me is that I started drinking and doing drugs when I was 14 years old, and I basically quit school as soon as I started getting high. I was in the summer between 7th and 8th grade, so 7th grade is the last grade that I actually completed. I became a full-time drug addict and bad attempt at a pot dealer, and I struggled with that until I was 22, and I entered a 30-day treatment center, which was popular and paid for by insurance back in the this was in 84, so back in the 80s, they still had insurance for that kind of thing, pretty readily available.
Right.
And I went ahead and did 30 days and started doing 12-step groups after that, and I got fully involved in that and stayed clean and sober, went to college, raised a child on my own, more or less, and had a little help, but as a single parent going to college, that sort of thing, staying sober. And I got to a point after I was in my 10th year of sobriety, and I decided to pull what we call in recovery a geographic, which means I'd like to be somewhere else, and I'll feel better when I get there.
Right.
And when you show up, you realize inevitably that you brought you with you. And, I got to Texas, a California boy, and felt a little bit odd because, you know, it was Texas. And they see things a little differently than I was used to. And I got in there and basically kind of gave up doing my 12-step program and got more into my other things. And one of those things I got into was taking LSD and practicing meditation. I thought that would be a really great idea. It actually wasn't a great idea. And these are the kind of ideas that we come up with when we leave the nest of our 12-step support system sometimes.
Yeah.
And I found out I was looking for a deep, penetrating psychological insight. And I did have one, if you'd like me to share what that was with you.
Yes, I would love it.
Yeah, I found out that I was extremely depressed and on a deep, deep level. So the drugs and meditation really took me into a place of darkness. And I found that that was really not sufficient. So I found that I really needed to experiment with some more modern drugs. I felt that it was maybe outdated, and maybe ecstasy was a better idea because that was, after all, designed for group therapy and
right.
bonding. But I took it, and I got paranoid and upset and had to leave the club and go home and sit by myself. So I basically got real depressed about the drugs not working and started drinking and using again. So I went on and off into sobriety for the most part for a couple, 3 years. And then in 97, I accidentally wound up in a 12-step meeting purely by accident. I did not go there intentionally. I wandered into the room, literally, and for some reason I sat down. And there was a cute girl there, and she invited me to sit down, and I try not to ignore a request like that from a
right,
cute girl.
Right.
So I sat down, and that was December 4th, 1997, 5,000 days ago today.
Wow.
So, I found out in coming back into sobriety that's really difficult to have long-term sobriety and then come back and reintegrate into 12-step as if you'd never heard any of it before. I found out that the 12-step recovery program for me is necessary, but ultimately is not sufficient in and of itself to gain what you mentioned, spiritual sobriety. And it's a really interesting topic. So after a few years struggling back, staying into 12-step work, I had started some therapy, actually, right in the beginning in the first year. And I've actually continued that, actually, for over 13 years now. So I stay with a therapist at all times and have somebody to reflect my great ideas off of. And,
right.
As well as my 12-step community, because, it's nothing like a guy with 2 years sober who knows it all to set you straight. And there's plenty of those guys and gals around, so...
Yeah,
I stay real close to that. I'm actually standing outside the meeting that I would be at right now, were we not on this call. So, I happen to be just. I'm actually in the hallway of the church talking to you guys. So,
how wonderful.
So, but I found out that I had to go back to my Zen practice, which I had gotten into in the 90s with Joko Beck, the author of Everyday Zen. Joko just passed. Coincidentally, on Sakadawa, the Buddhist triple holiday, on the 15th of June, she died that day. I don't know how, but she was my first real teacher, and she had taught me a lot. But I had found that when I came to these spiritual practices that were, they're designed for normal people. They're not, they're not designed. Joko actually says this I think it's a Tricycle article that I just dug up recently when she was passing. She actually says this, if you're disturbed, you got to seek some outside help. So I believe that the addict's mind is definitely, at least mine, is definitely one of that's disturbed. And I found that these practices like Zen Buddhism and so forth were really interesting and awesome, but for some reason I couldn't quite make it work. And if I went to the 12-step community, I couldn't quite get enough from that. I mean, I could stay sober, but I couldn't quite get the spiritual insights I was looking for at the time. So I began kind of weaving together this fabric of spiritual practice, with the thread going through the different aspects like psychotherapy, medication, if it's necessary. I did that for a couple of years. And the various Buddhist practices and so forth. So I found that, around 2005, I guess, or something like that, I had gotten into this Tibetan Buddhist lineage, and I'd started I had met a teacher and her teacher and the other teachers, and I started going on retreats and really paying attention to these things. And I started really getting an accelerated understanding of what I'd been missing in my knowledge, at least. Maybe there's plenty more to learn for sure, but I just got kind of an insight and a clarity that I started weaving it together where it made sense to me how to deal with the higher power and how important 12-step, program is, and yet, how to be the addict in the Buddhist community, because, you stand out like a sore thumb as an addict, and I found a lot of things. So I started writing about it. I started blogging about it. Kind of that writing stimulated some nice feedback, and people told me I should really, continue. And my therapist actually suggested, why don't you should write your story down? So I did that and started working on integrating methods of Buddhist meditation practice, psychotherapy, and so on, voice dialoguing process, and so on, into what is now the book. And that's been going. The book's been out in print a little bit over 2.5 years, and it's still getting great reviews, and I get constant emails from people telling me how much they appreciate it and so forth. So it's a real interesting, because I teach a group every week on basically integrating the different tools into recovery and using Buddhist terminology and principles to understand recovery and vice versa, and mm-hmm. how to use that. I've been doing this for about 4 years now, weekly here and around the country, different workshops and retreats. We've actually got a summer retreat coming up here at Brighton Bush Hot Springs on the 28th. of August, and the winter retreat, and which will be our third one in January at the Hot Springs. So things are coming along, and people are catching on. And there are some other books that were out before mine that I think kind of introduced people to some of the ideas. I just didn't feel that the work that was done at that time had really taken it as far as it needed to go, and they certainly were missing the components of mental illness, being duly diagnosed, the issues of relapsing with long-term sobriety, and basically what really amounts to the existential dilemma or the spiritual crisis that many, many people in recovery face with long-term sobriety. My sponsor calls that the funnel. We go into the funnel, and sometimes we don't come out. And some people die. Some people commit suicide sober. And there's a real high relapse rate. There's a high relapse rate among treatment professionals in the field. And so there's a lot that can be done to help people understand. I mean, for me to help myself understand, how to stay sober this time through the darker periods, if that makes sense. So that's why I use this. I always like my dope strong. I like my coffee strong, and I like all my medicine strong. So I use real strong medicine to treat a really, really powerful disease.
Well, that makes total sense. That makes total sense. And I like the way that I've always been fascinated by Zen Buddhism and some of the Tibetan and various other forms of spiritual pursuits, disciplines, and to be able to weave those together seems like a wonderful marriage. A lot of people have a difficulty with how to create a higher power, what is a higher power, and when people come into this 12-step program, many feel that it's a religious group or that it's all about God or something. Can you address that a little bit and maybe explain more about the 12-step program?
Well, fortunately or unfortunately, some of the criticisms are accurate. And as somebody who's been in this since, 26 years now, I'm very aware of some of the tendencies within the 12-step program to, get a little bit fundamentalist and self-righteous and dogmatic. And, it's probably like anything else based on the fear of, what'll happen if you drink again. And this is the way that works, and this is the only way it works. And, that kind of narrow-minded tunnel vision, but it's really unhealthy. in the long run, although it does work to keep, it helps a lot of people to a certain point. So I use the 12-step community, and I use it, but I mean, I participate in the 12-step community, and I use the 12 steps as a tool, but I don't put all my eggs in the basket there.
Mm-hmm.
I put 98% of my eggs in the basket on most days, but I do have my other practices. But the question of how to be a Buddhist or how to not be a Christian, for example, in 12-step is my most common question. So I address that pretty clearly in the steps that I wrote in the 12-step Buddhist. Step 2, 3, 7, 11, you know, deal directly with a higher power question.
Mm-hmm.
And I look at that in terms of some simple kind of tools that, you know, that we hear about in 12-step, but you know, these are some things that are pretty commonplace now in most spiritual bookstores and things like that. You can find a lot of books on how to be present in the moment and how to be mindful and that sort of thing. So there's a real simple way you can make your higher power the present moment.
Mm.
What is surrender to what is right now. And if you can surrender to what is right now without, as my teacher says, changing or modifying anything, look,
mm-hmm.
don't overlook. It's a simple practice, but don't overlook the profound nature of being able to absolutely surrender to what is in this moment. Whether or not that this moment sucks and is full of suffering,
right.
Or whether or not everything's going your way, and that's the trick. So there are ways that I look at in the book. I'm looking at a higher power, practicing principles. A principle is a higher truth, a higher power, using the help of, obviously, of the 12-step group. That's a common thing that's said. Use the group as your higher power.
Mm-hmm.
But I go in later on into Tibetan Buddhist practices, deity yoga practices like Green Tara and Guru Rinpoche and so forth, the seven line supplication to Padmasambhava, and these sorts of things that are real common in many Tibetan Buddhist schools. So there are ways to, you know, take it into, you know, practicing guru yoga and things like this. But really the simplest, there are simple approaches that are, you know, really powerful. And I think when we start to understand the essence, I mean, this is where, you know, my teachers come from the perspective of, look, I mean, we don't really have time in one right now. If we're just going to spend the rest of our lifetime, we don't really have time to master all the scriptural knowledge that there is out there. So let's get into the essence of what, and the power of what we're talking about, and really not to strip it down,
mm-hmm.
but to take away anything that's superfluous, and let's look at really what's happening. And, you know, this mm-hmm. is what Zen is all about. You know, Zen is about the direct experience of this
mm-hmm.
present moment.
Mm-hmm.
And in that moment, boom, you know, you can have a little awakening or a big awakening or something, but, you know, then you got to get up off your cushion and go deal with your dead battery or your
right.
or your divorce or your layoff or your stock portfolio or your cancer
right.
or your kids' drug addiction. So, you know, this is these are powerful practices that we can use, but the mentality of the addict is so unique, I think, in that it's an extreme version of attachment. You know, in Buddhist practice, we talk about attachment and you know, latching on to things that we think are going to provide happiness. And, you know, we find out inevitably that, you know, it didn't. The new car, the new this, the various meal, the various clothing, the status, the prestige. And 12-step, we call it money, property, prestige. You know, sex, gambling, anything we can get addicted to, food, power, all these things. You know, none of it really results in happiness, but we get attached and we cling to it as if our life depends on it. So, and the idea that I like to work with is that, you know, addiction is attachment gone wild.
Yeah.
You know, the addict is the extreme case of if you really play out the attachment. So they say to play out the next drunk before you go take the drink, you know, play it out and see what the sequence of events will be. If you look at the basic attachment of all sentient or all conscious beings, every being, you know, has this ignorance, attachment, and aversion, and to various degrees. And the animals are clearly not, you know, conscious and looking like they have a choice to get out of samsara or the infinite cycle of, you know, birth, sickness, old age, death, suffering, rebirth, 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 ad infinitum.
Right.
You know, forever. But, you know, they're still instinctually in their DNA and their program. They're still driven to attachment. They're driven to survive and so forth. So these patterns are there. And you look at all this in terms of the eyes of the addict, you can see what Buddha was talking about. Life is suffering. You can see it so clearly. You know, suffering arises from, you know, desire and attachment and anger and the, you know, the five poisons and emotion, you know, different emotional, you know, constructs and so on. So when you start to look at these things and then you go back into 12 step, it's like so crystal clear. You can't even deny it. I mean, 12-step meetings become so rich because it's a fertile, it's a field of spiritual potential, and it's just popping. I mean, you go in a meeting, you do some meditation practice, some yoga practice, you study Dharma, you do your meditation groups and so on. You come into a 12-step meeting, and you look at the people. Some people are struggling, but there's so many miracles happening every moment. It's like instantaneously, there's like enlightenment experience just crackling in the atmosphere, and it's so rich, you know, that there's no way to get bored or feel stagnant. In 12-step recovery, you go in there and say, wow, this is really the sangha or the spiritual community where I need to do my work. And my work isn't out there trying to, like, you know, hustle people or proselytize or sell them some Buddhist practice or something, but my work is to be a benefit, you know, somehow help. Not be a narcissistic, self-centered, self-absorbed jerk, and to go out there and really try to make a difference and make somebody feel better somehow, you know. And so anyways, I've found that these practices are really closely interrelated, and I kind of created this voice dialoguing application, which was taken from the original, you know, some Jungian archetype stuff that Hal Stone invented that. And they were calling it voice dialogue in the 80s, and then, you know, Genpo Roshi, kind of a controversial figure, but he started working with it for Zen students, and I just said, look, I'm going to apply this to addiction. We started doing these, you know, I trained somewhat with Genpo Roshi on some of his retreats and asking questions and trying things out and working with another Zen teacher and another therapist. And over time, you know, I wouldn't say perfected the technique, but the technique is always evolving, but it's a really neat way to apply psychological principles and, you know, archetypal knowledge, which, you know, crosses a lot of genres, a lot of things like shamanism and psychology, psychotherapy, and recovery and so on. So you start to speak from the voice, for example, of the addict, you know, and you take it out of the shadows and you allow the addict to have its voice. And you want to start to understand some things, like one shaman told me, you know, the addict on one hand, on one end is a really perverted and sick version of the healer, because the addict's trying to, you know, heal the pain, you know, but he doesn't know how, because all he knows is, you know, grab the next fix, you know, grab the next drink. And if you take a look at what happens in healing, on the other end of the spectrum, you know, and try to integrate and give the addict a little bit of food for thought and a little bit of air time and a little bit of way to come out and play, without dominating the personality, then. So some of these types of, you know, practices we do and talk about these various types of archetypes or aspects of self, as I try to call it, something like that, you know, aspects of self, which is applicable to Buddhist terminology, applicable to recovery, you know, applicable to anyone's life, really. So, I mean, that's why I wrote that book for everybody. I feel like anybody who wants to know anything about anything should study Buddhism, because it's a science of the mind. It's not a religion. It can be religious if you want. Yeah, you know, some people make things religious, but really, honestly, it's actually just really a science of understanding the mind and experience, and to move out of suffering into happiness. And you start to look at that Buddhist technology through the eyes of the addict, it becomes crystal clear. Mm-hmm. And then if you're in recovery and you want to look at spiritual development, you can take what they do in 12-step further, because, you know, there's a way to achieve enlightenment, the enlightenment of the Buddha, you know, complete omniscience, absolute free, total liberation, to never return to suffering. These are the promises, you know, and if you go to an AA meeting, you know, they always have the promises. You know, Buddhism has a promise too. You can become Buddha. You're already Buddha, and depending on what schools you talk to, some will say you have Buddha potential, some will say you're already Buddha, some will say, you know, you can get there for if you practice for 10 million lifetimes or whatever, but you know, the point is that they don't really address this in 12 step. And although in 12 step we talk about having the be quick to see where religious people are right. I don't think they delineated between religious and spiritual so much in that, but you know, look, the world libraries are filled, or we realize we know only a little. We go out and try to explore the rich field of information and practices that are out there. And then, you know, as an addict, knowing that, look, if my DNA ever changes, if I become so spiritually developed that I can really demonstrate, if you read something like, you know, Autobiography of a Yogi, you can understand if you read some of the practices of Mahasiddhas, you know, biographies of Mahasiddhas, you know, great enlightened practitioners in India and so forth. I mean, they really become magical feats, you know, people walk through walls, they teleport, they're clairvoyant, there's a lot of things. And if I get to that point, you know, I might could be able to take a drink again, you know, but I probably should talk to my sponsor first.
Right.
You know, yeah, because the only way I can prove myself, the only way I can prove that I'm so enlightened that I can drink again is to take a drink. And if I'm wrong, then I lose my 5,000 days. I got to start all over. So all I'm saying is that I stay in the mindset of the addict because it's a helpful way to practice and it keeps me sober. And I practice my Buddhism, and I do it within 12-step meetings, just within myself. I don't talk about Buddhism in meetings.
But
I know when I go in, I know when they say, God, this is God's will, I translate that to, okay, God's will. Okay, compassion, absolute compassion, yeah. Bodhicitta, you know, the kind of abandonment of self for others. Okay, God's will is probably that. You call it God's will, I call it bodhicitta. It's okay. I don't have to argue. I don't have to prove a point. I don't have to tell the Christians that they're wrong or whatever. I mean, we're all in the same boat, you know.
Exactly.
And I can, yeah.
Exactly. Yes, and I'm sure that the act or practice of being mindfulness is very helpful in staying present to the moment and seizing opportunities and the synchronicities that go on as a result of our continually changing our choices, which provide better choices. And that, as I see it, that takes us on a whole new path that we've never been on before.
Makes sense.
Now, I have some questions for you, because not everybody is up to speed with all of this, and there are going to be people listening who might not know that they have a problem, might be wondering if they have a problem. How can one determine if one has a problem, especially if the relatives and so on are not saying anything or they're afraid to say something? I mean, what would you suggest for people who are actually beginning to wonder that question?
Well, this is an excellent question, and I've answered it about 10,000 times in my life, because I get a lot of questions like, what do I do about my son? He's in prison. He won't take his meds, and he's addicted. Or what do I do about my this or my whoever? Yeah. And you know, we if it's the family member, if it's the individual, you know, I mean, basically, I think I wrote that book so that if you read that book, you're going to understand what the nature of addiction is in a very, very clear way. Uh-huh. You're going to understand what the games are and what the solutions are. And if you read the 12-step literature, like the Narcotics Anonymous, It Works, How and Why, the Alcoholics Anonymous Basic Text, the Al-Anon books, you know, maybe read the sex addiction and the gambling and all these, you know, you can go online and get all this stuff, you know, go to some meetings. I mean, but basically the question is, you know, I look at addiction, I think it's fairly common nowadays to think of addiction, not necessarily if you go to like a pure Alcoholic Anonymous meeting, it's a little bit single-mindedness of purpose with that. But I mean, I look at addiction as any process, event, substance, or person that one becomes attached to the point where, despite consequences, we're going to keep on doing what we're doing. And we feel like we can stop, but we can't stop. And then we have remorse, and then we go back to it again. Mm-hmm. You know, if that sounds like your life, you're probably addicted to something. Mm-hmm. You know, and people are addicted to cigarettes. You watch people smoke. They smoke like junkies. When you watch people smoke, they look like a junkie. No, they look like a junkie. And if you watch some people eat, they look like a junkie. And if you and it's not that, it's not really society doesn't say, well, you're at McDonald's three times a day, you better go to detox. But if you look at obesity, I mean, obesity is one of the biggest problems among children in the country right now. And you look at the habits, so you can see there are levels of addiction, there are societal norms about what's acceptable and so forth. There are many things that people are actually addicted to that aren't really illegal or anything. So it's real interesting to try to understand what it's like to be compulsive about your nutrition or your workaholic mentality. But when you want to talk about just the standard kind of stuff, alcohol and drugs, you know, it's a little bit clearer cut. I mean, this is the kind of thing that, you know, I'm drinking on the job, I'm drinking at home, I'm drinking only at work, I'm drinking or only at home, you know, never swearing to resign if ever drunk on the job, all these kind of things. I mean, you can read the AA big book, you know, chapter to the agnostic first paragraph. If when you honestly want to, you cannot, you know, control the amount you drink, and or you cannot quit entirely, you know, you're probably alcoholic. If so, you're you know, maybe suffering from an illness which only a spiritual experience will conquer. So, you know, NA has its own way of looking at it. You know, CODA has its own way of looking at it. But, you know, there's over 300 different types of 12-step programs. I mean, AA is the biggest. NA is the second biggest. Al-Anon's really up there. And there's some other ones in different parts of the country. Cocaine Anonymous is big in different parts of the country and so forth. But, you know, the long and the short of it is that if you're doing something that you said you don't want to do, and then you do it again, and then it causes problems, and then you say you're never going to do it, and then you do it again, and it causes problems, and you're in a cycle. And you can take a look at my book or the books on recovery that I mentioned, and you can go to some of these meetings and talk about it. But, I mean, what I've found, like, I get a lot of questions from people that want to fix their partner, their lover, their family member. They don't understand that they're part of the disease. They're part of the problem.
Right.
And it's a system of illness. So if you're in the family, you got to go to like Al-Anon, you got to go to six meetings and don't make a decision, get a sponsor, work the steps so that you can understand what you're doing to contribute to the disease.
Yes.
Nobody likes to hear that, but I don't have to deal with the, with that. I mean, the program of Al-Anon is there for people.
And it's a wonderful program.
Yeah. There's a lot of people that really survive.
It's a wonderful program. There's nothing to be afraid about in going into those rooms. Yes, it might be a little scary the first time to walk in unannounced, but there is love in those rooms, and one is welcomed, and it can be an amazing transformational experience.
It really is, and you know, sometimes people give me this, I have a lot of options, and I consider that, you know, the 12th step is one of my options, and I will consider that, and so on and so forth. And I think, well, here's what you're missing. I mean, nobody says it's the only way, but here's what you're missing. You're missing, if you don't participate in it, you're missing going into a place where every single person there is just like you on some level. They know exactly what it's like. Why did you... You know, the mother may say to the husband, what do you mean you drained our accounts on online pornography? What do you mean you have a felony and you just lost your license to practice because you're in a porn shop participating in some illegal sexual behavior? And the sex addict will look at the normie, the non-addict, and say, I don't know. I had to do it. And if you tell that story to another, say, sex addict, they're going to say, oh yeah, I know. I got caught at work too. And, or, you know, I'm using an example from sex addiction, but you know, this works just the same for alcoholism, cocaine, pot, you know, food addicts anonymous is really big right now. Mm. A lot of people find a lot of relief in that kind of thing. So, you know, you go into a place where people have lived it and they're not judging you. I mean, there's judgment. Everybody's, you know, everybody's a jerk in their own way. I mean, we're all going to judge each other. But the thing is that there's acceptance there, and you know, it's not like you walk in and it's a warm flowing blanket of love and everybody hugs you and you're cured. But it is like you go in there and you don't feel so alone and isolated and disconnected anymore. And you understand that there are other people who suffer just like you, and you don't have to get, you don't have to do it alone.
That's right. That's right. Right.
You know, and that, you know, that's a solution that I say, well, gee, maybe you could do, maybe you can do a bunch of other trips and go on, and you can go to some like rejuvenation center or something and this and that, and maybe that'll help you. But I mean, there's a meeting, there's probably 5 meetings a day in your town,
mm-hmm.
you know, of some sort. And why not utilize that opportunity? Because it's a very, very rich, deep, meaningful resource. There's a lot of really, really beautiful, amazing people.
Oh, yeah.
That they don't really want, they don't even really, they don't want anything from you. You know, it doesn't cost anything.
Right.
You go to a meeting and sit down. Maybe they say to you, why don't you get a job in the meeting? You know, sweep the floor, make coffee, you know, greet people, bring treats, you know, be the secretary, be the treasurer. That job is not paid. That job keeps you connected and affiliated with your recovering community and makes you feel like you're a part of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, nobody wants anything from you except for you to be okay.
Yeah, and
they don't, and they get you. Like, they're not going to get you. They're not going to get you unless they're an addict too. That's really the point I make to everybody.
Yeah.
You know, if you're not an addict, you don't understand why they. Why did you spend the rent on crack? No.
Right.
So you're going to get understood. Why did you? What you told? You swore you were done.
Yeah.
You said you'd never do this, and I believed you.
Yeah.
You know, so if you're an addict or if you think you might have a problem, you know, you can explore some of these things. But honestly, the best thing to do is surrender.
Mm-hmm.
Drop the rock, join the parade, walk in the meeting, and say, look, I'm done. Yeah. I'm hurting, and I'm alone, and I'm afraid, and this sucks. What do? Ask for help. Surrender to the process.
Yeah.
If you do that, it works. You know, and if you don't like that idea, then you can keep doing what you're doing. But there really is a solution there, you know. And I think, you know, a lot of people come to me and they say, oh, well, you know, I don't want to go to AA or something because it's, you know, they're a Christian or something, and I'm Buddhist and this and that, and I'm just going to meditate. And I'm like, well, you're going to meditate your way right into another fix, drink, pill, drug, because
because you
don't have the tools of staying sober.
Right.
So it's fine to be in meditation and these different practices, but we really do have to have the priority of being sober in order to make those things work well for us in our life, you know.
That's right. And, you know, the funny thing about all this is our mentality when we're actively in our addiction is that it would be terribly difficult to try and make a change and go to meetings or find some kind of a 3-month program or some way to address the problem. But the truth of the matter is, from my own experience, having had long periods of sobriety and intermittent, and now I have about a little over a year, is that it is the easier, softer way. It really is. It's the easier, softer way, because once you let go and you accept what is, and this speaks to what you mentioned earlier, then it's all easy. It's like, oh, okay, I have a problem, and I'm in the right place, and I'm doing everything I can, and I'm with people who understand me. And one of the things I like about the people in the rooms is that they've been through some horrific experiences, and that tends to really tear away the ego. And so it's not a room full of egotistical, although there are egotistical people. We all have ego, and that's part of what we need to work on. And that's part of the spiritual process. But you find a lot of people who have compassion because they've been in the food bins and sleeping in streets and needles in their arms and the whole nine yards. And you realize that you yourself could go lower if you didn't address your problem. So it really is refreshing to be able to be with people who are of like mind and all different at the same time.
I couldn't agree more. And that's what I do. That's why I got 5,000 days.
And I love it. And it's so ironic that you have that tonight. I mean, it's really a wonderful validation that you're meant to be on this program. And if one does believe in a higher power, and I do, however I choose to perceive it, I do believe that it works in very strange and sometimes obvious ways. And this is one of those things that is a validation for me that this is an important topic, and you have a wonderful message, and that you have a great book that can help people, and maybe it will be an opening into other doors will open. Before we go on, I want to make sure that people know your website address. It is the12stepbuddhist.com, and you have a lot of wonderful information on there, and there's a place where people can ask you questions, and there's all kinds of resources there for people to draw upon. So I highly recommend that people who are interested go check out your website and find out more about it.
Yeah, I've got some podcasts, and I haven't done one in a while. I've got some blogs. You can get the blog on Kindle and so forth. I'm going to write a new article, actually starting a new article on the 5,000 days and some yoga practices that I'm working on, okay, integrating that stuff into my recovery. So there's always new, interesting information coming forward, you know. But, you know, get the book and get a copy for your therapist and your spouse. Leave one on the bathroom table by accident for the person who's addicted.
Yeah.
And, you know, again, a lot of people tell me, oh, my therapist, I had somebody tell me on Facebook the other day, my shrink's reading your book. And, you know, there's a lot of ways of looking at things. And, you know, like you said, it's about opening up to different, there's so many different ways of looking at things, and it's about opening up to a couple things just to free yourself up so that you don't feel like you're stuck in a box.
Right.
And you get a little bit of freedom, and it becomes kind of fun. Like somebody said one time, you have to wear your recovery like a loose shirt, you know. You can be a little bit more free-flowing and have a better time if you're not so hard line and, you know, super militant and rigid and this kind of thing. So, I mean, there's a lot of ways to go to soften around the edges and open up the heart of compassion, mm-hmm, start to find some deeper meaning to things, you know, because, I mean, this is what happens when I stop drinking and using, you know, I start to suffer. You know, the problem is I don't have my medicine. If you take away the substances, events, processes, or people, and what you're left with is the chronic, acute, you know, long-term psychic pain that got you there in the first place. And so finding what we call in 12-step a sufficient substitute, and vastly more than that, you know, using things like meditation, mindfulness practice, you know, changing your diet, getting some counseling, quitting smoking, you know, a few less trips to the donut shop, you know, things like this. Boy, a lot of stuff starts to change, and you really start to feel different. There's this famous speaker that says, first it gets real, then it gets different, then it gets real different.
That's good. I like that. Well, you know, with a clear mind, and it takes some time for the mind to clear, I find that there are more doors opening for me, and I'm able to see things in a different light and get more done, and I'm able to join in with other people where I was a hermit and isolating before, and it's a wonderful experience.
Fantastic.
One of the things that I heard in the rooms a long time ago, and this applies to the fact that sometimes we have good days and sometimes we have bad days. Well, it's also like that in recovery. And somebody once said, not every day can be a Doris day. So it's important to remember that even without substances, we will have days that are up and down, but we can get through them. And there is help and support and safety net there.
Yeah, and I mean, to be honest with you, my main focus isn't really the frontline treatment. You know, there's a lot of programs. There are a lot of people, you know, there are a lot of meth addicts on the street that can go into mm-hmm. program and a lot of things people can do to get detox and get sober. My focus is not that it isn't important, and I'd help anybody who asked me for it, but the focus that I have really is helping the people that are sober for a while and get stuck.
Mm-hmm.
The people who you know, there's somebody with, I don't know, she's got 8 or 10 years and she's never tried meditation, you know.
Uh-huh.
There's people who, I get emails from these people, you know, who've got over decades of sobriety, and they talk about how, you know, you can still get into some serious depression, or you can switch addictions. And like I said in the beginning of the program, you know, so I'm looking at trying to help people either. Well, really what winds up happening is that there's some hardliner fundamentalists who don't feel that they need any help, and they're not the ones who really read the book. The ones who read the book are ones who've been around a long time, who have hit the wall, mm. or ones who are just coming in, people, brand new people who are coming into recovery,
mm.
who are reading the book and trying to approach recovery from a more open mind.
Mm.
It's kind of a little bit paradoxical to what I said, because while that isn't my real focus, dealing with the people just getting sober, you get yourself sober somehow or another through some detox, some program,
right,
some
right.
clinic, and then when you're working your program and you're involved and you're trying to develop, you start to apply things that I think there's a new genre of people. There's a lot of, you know, when I was a kid, my parents were, you know, they were raised in the Depression era, World War II. And, you know, my older brother was from the 50s and this and that. You know, nowadays, the Generation Xers and the Millennium kids and people that were born in the 80s and 90s, their parents, these are the people who are coming into recovery now, and their parents are people who either grew up in the 60s, 70s, or 80s, right?
So, oh, yeah, yeah.
So they're looking at things, you know, they've been exposed to mindfulness and yoga and being a vegetarian and, you know, all kinds of things that I was never exposed to.
Mm.
And I feel like there's an acumen, you know, there's a sharper, you know, there's a spiritual readiness that a lot of younger, you know, you see people come in their 20s and they get what I'm talking about in that book really easy, because it's not so foreign to them. Eastern thinking isn't so foreign to them, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so what I'm saying is that on one hand is that I'm not really out there trying to, like, say, okay, here's how you get off crack. There's a lot of places for you to get off crack.
Right.
What I'm
saying
is once you get off crack and you're working a program, you can do some stuff that would help ensure mm-hmm. that 20 years from now, you don't feel like you're stuck between a rock and a hard place, even though you've been clean and sober.
Yeah.
Or if you do feel like it, you don't have to rely on the generic answer. Well, write another fourth step.
Right.
Go help a newcomer. And, you know, all those things are wonderful practices, but sometimes we need to look a little deeper, do a little deeper spiritual mining.
Right.
Like I'm talking about. And there's nothing better than deep meditation practice and breath work and, you know, all kinds of different things that we can do. So the people who are coming in now who are reading books like The 12-Step Buddhist and stuff like this, 10, 15, 20 years from now, they're going to be the people that have long-term sobriety who are already equipped with tools. And this is what is exciting to me, because, you know, this stuff is all kind of in the past, maybe 7 or 8 years started to come out. And who knows what it's going to look like later if people start to develop these additional complementary skills.
Right, right, right. I like how your word that you coined, the funnel syndrome. Can you elaborate on that a little bit so that we understand? It has to do with, you know, the same things over and over, and you kind of get stuck.
Well, the funnel is a term that my sponsor, John P. from Long Beach, coined, and he says, you know, you can see the effects of the funnel. So there's a metaphor for it. Like if you go to a big 12-step group and they have a sobriety countdown, or they get everybody goes up to get coins, you see a huge amount of people. But at the wide end of the funnel, there's a huge amount of people getting coins for sobriety of 30 days, 60 days, 90 days, 6 months, a year, 18 months, you know, this and that, and first few years. And then it starts to starts to be, the funnel starts to narrow. The mouth starts to narrow. You get, there's somebody with two, there's somebody with four, there's two people at six, there's somebody at 10, then there's nobody until 17, and then at the end, there's one old guy with a cane going up there getting his 47-year coin, you know, and that's the one little drop. Out of all those people that come in, there's only a few that remain.
Yeah,
and of the few that remain, you know, of the few that remain, I mean, honestly, I don't want to say, but the few that remain, you know, are they really spiritually evolved people?
Yeah.
Or have they just made it through?
Yeah.
Sometimes there's wisdom. Sometimes there's deep compassion. But for the most part, I think that without really getting into deep, spiritually evolved work, that we're missing the rest of the possibility that's there to achieve real what the Dalai Lama calls, you know, the art of happiness, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like if you look at the funnel, you can see how that's true. I see it at almost every meeting I've ever gone to in any state in the country. I've been in like 25 different cities over the past few years doing, talking about the book and this and that. And I see it everywhere. I see it constantly. The other part of the funnel, though, that's not the graphic illustration, is just the idea that you get into a dark tube, and you don't know you're in it. You're in a place where you're not drinking and using, if drugs and alcohol are your addiction, so you're not participating in your drug of choice.
Right.
But you're really, really effed up, and you're really in a bad way.
Yeah.
And you're really locked up, and at some point, something's got to break.
Yeah, yeah.
So the funnel is a place that a lot of people get to. My sponsor originally said, you know, people hit it between 7 and 11 years. You know, some people hit it later. And, you know, there's always the dark night of the soul and any spiritual, you know, warrior's path and so on.
Yeah.
You know, but if you don't have a real strong lineage, a guru, a teacher, a sangha, a spiritual support community, a lot of deep explanations and practices and ways of looking at the problem from multiple angles, then things can look pretty small. Like your viewpoint can get pretty small. When you go into a meeting, if you got 6, 7, you know, 14 years sober and you're suicidal, and you go into a meeting and they're saying the same thing that they've said every meeting you've ever been to, and you can't stand hearing it another time.
Right.
And you walk out of there and you want to put a bullet in your head, then you're probably in the funnel.
Okay, that makes sense to me.
You see what I mean?
I understand that one.
And a lot of people drink or do take extreme measures. So what I'm trying to say is that, you know, go pick up the 12-step Buddhist. Go start looking around at different groups where you can add to your recovery by bringing some new practices into your life. There's a lot of things to choose from. It depends on where you're at. I mean, if you're in the middle of Indiana, it might be harder than, you know, if I'm in Portland, Oregon, we've got like 47 wellness centers. There's something on every corner, you know. There's like 100 programs going on at any given point, and everything from sound therapy to Ayurvedic cleansing, and who knows? I mean, there's so many things. So, you know, I'm saying that, you know, I tell you how to do that in the book because this is what I need to do to survive. I don't want to go through another relapse, and I know what the disease is like. You know, when they say that, you know, the longer I'm sober, you know, the disease is progressive, and my solution needs to be progressive.
That's right. You know? That's right. Yes, the disease is out there doing push-ups by your car, even as we speak.
That's right. So I've got to be pumping my spiritual iron. Okay?
That's right.
Anyways, so I guess that sounds like a pretty good way to close. I mean, I think unless you have any other questions.
Well, I think that's about it. I guess some of the ways that addiction shows up in people's lives. Just so that we know, are binging, some of the ways that we convince ourselves that we're not, having a shot in the morning, never drinking at work, but then, you know, we always find ourselves slipping into, you know, well, I'll just have one at lunch, changing the substance, well, I'll switch from Jack Daniels to wine, and then from wine to beer, or I'll swear off entirely for a week, and we find ourselves, at least that's what I found, continuing to return even stronger and more committed to to my addiction. So I think if anybody finds that for themselves, then this is something to look into, and this book would be a wonderful way to kind of break into it and find some practical solutions as well as some spiritual solutions. So I'm all for it.
I agree completely.
Well, now we have a couple minutes left. Why don't you share where you'll be going, what you're doing, and where to find your book, and so on and so forth, and your retreats.
Well, like I said, the next retreat, there's still time to register. It's at Brighton Bush Hot Springs. You can get that information at thetwelvestepbuddhist.com. We're going to do present moment awareness for Sunday through Tuesday. We're going to walk in the forest, sit in the natural hot springs, share a little bit about our recovery, and get a little bit more depth of our awareness, maybe do some different things. We'll do some yoga and that sort of thing. The next retreat is, I think it's February 8th at Brighton Bush. You can find that soon on the12stepbuddhist.com. You can get the book at Amazon, Powell's.com, Borders, Barnes & Noble, any online bookseller, independent booksellers and spiritual bookstores, such as Breed Books in Baltimore, for example, New Renaissance in Portland, a lot of these different controversial bookstores in San Diego. You know, they're all, it's everywhere, and you can find that link right on the12stepbuddhist.com. And by all means, if you have questions or read the book, and then the question, you know, that you might have, maybe hasn't already been answered. A lot of times people ask me questions that I spent hours and hours and days writing chapters on it. So read the book, and you get into that stuff, and if things aren't clear, then you can contact me, and you can find out how to, I've got some articles on there about how to start a 12-step sangha or a meditation group, you know, and build the fellowship you crave. I've got a podcast on that. And, you know, if you have any further questions or thoughts, if you'd like me to come to your area and lead a retreat or a weekend workshop or a day-long retreat or a talk, something like that, just let me know, because I'm always happy to go do that. And, you know, as long as the opportunity is there, you know, I'm definitely wanting to try to help. So, yeah, I'm definitely available for consultation when people feel like they've, you know, hit a wall. You can give me an email. Let me see if I can direct you. Also, you can look at the resource tab on my website, various things like that. So, good luck to everybody out there. And you can find freedom from addiction and suffering. And if you found that freedom, you can also find, deeper freedom from the, when the old wounds come to the surface after years of sobriety, you can also deal with that. Mm-hmm. And you don't have to leave. You don't graduate. You don't have to graduate from 12-step recovery. You can stay right in your home group, arguing at the business meeting about what flavor coffee you should have.
Right.
You know.
Right.
But,
right.
But then you have a deeper practice too.
That's
tongue, exchanging self for others. You can sit there and say, okay, there's that SOB sitting there. Boy, he was over there looking at my car the other day. What would it be like to imagine giving him your car? You know, there's a lot of practices in Buddhism that we can do to deal with things in recovery that would otherwise, pass us by. There's a lot of great solutions in the 12-step literature too, so please don't overlook those.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Well, Darren, thank you so much for being on the show, and I wish you the best of luck with the book. I highly recommend it. I'm still working on it. I haven't gotten all the way through it, because there's processes and things that one needs to do, but it is an excellent book, and I highly recommend it. In fact, I gave one to a friend of mine. So thank you for sharing your experience, strength, and hope with all of us, and I, again, honor all of those who are working on this path of recovery. And thanks again for being on tonight.
Well, thanks for having me, and I'm going to go catch the last 2 minutes of my meeting.
Oh, all right. All right. Maybe you can share about your radio show.
Send me a link to the program so I can share it with others on my website.
There you go. Well, I'll make sure you have a link to the show so you can put it up on your site if you want, or share it with other people.
All right. Thanks so much, Lance. I enjoyed
the conversation. All right, Darren. Thanks a million for all your help with everybody, and that's a wrap. Good night.
Good night.